Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to All Sides Weekend slash books, as we say in writing. We're going to talk about books between now and 12 noon. We'll want your phone calls. We'd like to know what you're reading, what you liked, what you didn't like. And we have our star panel here, most of it, to talk about their favorites and some new recommendations. And one, I love two things about this show before we get going. We have so much fun off mic, you know.
We do.
That we very often forget to go on mic. And Amy Jurevich, our producer, is pointing. And so we're here. We do expect, I think, Bill Eichenberger to join us later. But Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic and proprietress of the blog The Longest Chapter, is with us, as is Kevin Griffith, who is professor of creative writing, English poetry, and all things literary at Capital University. And they both bring stacks of books when they come to this program. I want to just, because I'm such a Luddite and I need to learn about this stuff, I want to ask Kevin to start us off because he was showing off very proudly his iPad.
That's right. I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Well, the one thing is I'm a cheapskate, so of course you get a Kindle or an iPad, and the first thing you want to do is figure out how to get books for free through it. And so I thought I'd plug the Columbus Metropolitan Library a little bit here. I have an iPad, but if you get an application called Media Overdrive, and you just go to the library's main webpage to do that, and you download Media Overdrive, you can now check out books from the Columbus Metropolitan Library for free. And they appear, you download them to your iPad or other device, and you get them for 14 days, 14-day lending period, and then they're automatically returned to the library. So you don't have to worry about taking them back to the library. And the offerings are limited for right now. There's about 1,000 books, and they're mostly new books. It's new fiction, new nonfiction.
So not all the books are available.
No.
Is that deliberate to get people to create buzz about the new books? Or?
I think so. I think publishers are doing that. I checked out a very good book by Carol Burt. She's a British author. She was longlisted for the Booker Prize. This book is called Jamrach's Menagerie by Carol Burt. It's just a wonderful, very well-written adventure story. Nothing more, nothing less, about a young boy who goes on a whaling ship, and there's a lot of Moby Dick-like scenes of whaling. And then they're also part of their journey is they're expected to bring back a Komodo dragon for this zookeeper. Mm-hmm. And so they go to the island of Komodo, get the Komodo dragon, but then things go really bad. There's a shipwreck, and the dragon escapes, and they're adrift at sea. Just a wonderful book if you're looking for complete escapist, end of the summer, something fresh.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
Jamrach's Menagerie. It's available as a paper book, obviously, but you can also download it for free through Media Overdrive through the Columbus Metropolitan Library.
Tell me again the author's name.
Carol Burch. She's the author of 11 books. Carol Burch, Jamrach's Menagerie.
Is she new to you?
Yes, she was new to me. I haven't heard of her. And that's one of the nice things about actually having your offerings limited. It's like looking at the new bookshelf at the library. You can just kind of discover new people and see what's just come out. And it's very popular. Almost all the books on Media Overdrive already are checked out and have waiting lists. It's kind of hard to get.
So there are waiting lists for it. Because that's what I was thinking maybe would
really
be a benefit.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, is when you buy these things, are they, do you decide what books you want in them or do they come all loaded with books? How does that work?
Oh, no. When you get at least I just know the iPad and then I know the Kindle, but with the iPad, you can just for free download a Kindle app.
So it's up to you.
And so you can get books through Kindle. It also has an iBooks app, so you can get books through iBooks. And you have to remember that now hundreds of thousands of books are free because anything that's pre-1923, the
dead,
copyright's
free, yeah.
Expired.
Yeah.
So I have Ulysses on there, Frankenstein, everything I teach in my humanities class at Capital is now free.
But one great thing you told me, speaking of Ulysses, because we've all tried to crack James Joyce's Ulysses, and depending on your emotional state at the time, you said that with the iPad, words are defined for you.
Yes, all you have to do is while you're reading Ulysses, or I'm also reading Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace, any page, you can just tap on a word and it'll define the word. It'll go right to the definition of the word, and so that helps your reading comprehension.
Faulkner, yes, yeah. I wonder though, since a lot of James Joyce's words he made up, yes. I wonder what they're going to do with that. But anyway, I'm glad to know about that. As I say, I myself I'm hopeless, but I really need to get on the bandwagon with these things.
Believe me, I was too. It's very easy, and if I can do it, anybody can. Believe me.
Well, and the thing is about them too, though, is that they're still working it out with the publishing companies, and I know with the libraries too, which is it's something like there you only get so many downloads per book. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the final agreement was, but there are a lot of issues behind the scenes that we're not aware of as readers. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, what if you don't finish it in 14 days? Do you just sign up for it again, get it back? Mm-hmm. Are there a limited amount of times that you can access it?
I know from the library's rules, you can check out as many as 10
at a time. Okay.
And if they do expire after 14 days, and after that time, you must just
re-sign up. It's
just like renewing a book.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's 14. Well, they're new books, so they'd be 14 days anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's our tutorial on, and we're going to do one every time you come because I think it's helpful. I mean, and I need to learn more about it. So selfishly, mm-hmm. we'll do that. Cassie Rose, you mentioned a name outside that I want you to talk about on the air. That name is Larry Heineman because I didn't know anything about him, and I was surprised, given what you said, that mm-hmm. Kevin told us his books are not available in the Columbus Public Library. Tell me about Larry Heineman, the author.
Larry Heineman is considered one of the best and longstanding and definitive Vietnam writers. He came out with his first book, Close Quarters, I believe in the 1970s. He's a Vietnam vet. He also happened to be my advisor in graduate school in Chicago. And during that time, he was writing his second book, Paco's Story, and I have memories of him doing readings in the bars with all of us students were listening to him, and sometimes you're saying, oh, man, he's got a lot of work to do here. But he went on to win the National Book Award for Paco's Story and beat out, you could say, or above Beloved, which everybody thought Toni Morrison would get it.
And did he get a negative backlash for that, do you think?
I don't think he did, but it was one of those situations where the entire literary community said it was, how could the National Book Award do this? We're, overlooking Beloved. I mean, Toni Morrison, my gosh, I mean, she went on to win the Pulitzer for it, went on to get the Nobel. And I wrote him a letter when he won the award and congratulated him. And he wrote me back and told me the story in this 3-page letter about winning the award, being so surprised sitting at the dinner to hear his name. He didn't really have a speech prepared. And that afterwards, they were going out to dinner with his agent and publisher and they wanted to go to the plaza or somewhere. And it was like 1 a.m. and they were just wouldn't let him in. And finally, his publisher shouted, "This guy just won the National Book Award." And suddenly, all the guys in their bow ties, open the doors and let them in.
Open sesame.
Yeah, he's...
Well, sell him to us. Tell us a little bit about him as a writer. And you said the first book you considered definitive in terms of the Vietnam-era fiction.
Absolutely. And he may not be available at the public library, but his book is still in print. And to still be in print, in paperback, to be able to... I would probably bet you could go to Barnes & Noble's, the brick-and-mortar store, and find it there.
Sure.
That's a very gritty book. It's very raw and realistic in terms of the Vietnam experience. Paco's story is about a vet who comes back and he works as a dishwasher in Chicago. And you get really into the mindset of the vet and how he feels and what his experience is trying to get his life back after the war. So, Kevin's nodding his head here. I assume you read it?
Yeah, I read it about a month ago after you had talked about it on the air because you sold me on it and I saw it and I immediately grabbed it. And it's a post-Vietnam story. Mm-hmm. It's about returning home and it's a severely injured vet. Mm-hmm. He was the only survivor of an attack by the Viet Cong and he has to take all sorts of pain medications and deal with that on a daily basis. And it's just about him trying to just eke out an existence and figure out if he could ever love someone again. And it's an amazing story.
Mm-hmm. Tim O'Brien is another definitive writer, and everybody thinks of The Things They Carried, which was an astonishing Vietnam book, and he also went on to write a few others. But Larry Heineman, again, he's one of the first that came out and wrote just powerful books that feel very true and like you're really getting what the experience was like.
And it's getting to be late summer, so there's still time for books that are also can sort of hit you in a different way. And I bring that up because you brought with you Cassie Rose, Violette Noisière, which is a nonfiction book. And it we'll probably talk about that more during the course of the program. But I wanted to bring it up because I read it. It's not really a murder mystery because you know who done it. But the whole the whole background and setting of this young woman from the 1930s who she
poisoned.
She poisoned
her parents.
And her father died.
Yes, her father dies. Her mother does not.
Yeah, and they thought she was the model daughter of this lower middle-class French family, when in fact she was enjoying the nightlife.
She was in the Latin Quarter.
Yeah.
They were sending her off to school, and she was going out and being a party girl and making up stories about herself.
Yeah, creative ones. She had a good mind on her, yes.
She did. She said that her father was in upper management for the trains and that her mother was one of the prominent women in the fashion industry. And she herself would steal her parents' money and go out and buy herself the best clothes and the best hats. And she would, you know, make up stories in front of these bourgeois men that she would meet. And she was a little loose for the time. Would go into
a little loose for the time. Are you kidding me? I would have locked her up in a convent.
Right. And she gets syphilis, too. And the doctor decides to, you know, during
that
time,
right.
Yes, to help preserve her reputation, tells her parents it's a disease that can be inherited, so that somewhere in their lineage, a great-grandfather probably had it. And so her parents buy that story. And because of that, it opens up the opportunity for her to poison them, because she creates these little packets of barbiturates that she has bought from the pharmacist in little packets, and she tells her parents that they all have to take it because of this disease
You had to wonder about the parents a little bit. Because they seemed a little gullible. I mean,
yes.
You know, drink this, honey. It's good for
yes.
you, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she had tried it once before.
But what I didn't realize, I had never heard of this case, but at the time, apparently, it was the tabloid sensation in pre-war Paris, you know, in the early 1930s. Everybody in France, probably all of Europe, talked about this and knew about this case.
Right. And it's one of the reasons that Sarah Mazza wanted to write about this, is to say that, you know, on interwar Paris, it wasn't all Coco Chanel and Josephine Baker and Hemingway and all of this. She wanted to write about the working class people that came in from the country, the lives that they set up in southeastern Paris, which was just south of Père Lachaise Cemetery, and how they intentionally would have one child so they could send this child to school. The education was opening up to the women, and they were becoming office workers, and how this whole lifestyle that was going on, when we think back on that time, we think of these iconic figures that were famous, and we also then think, well, Hitler was coming to power, and so we think of Paris in that way. And she paints a story here, or paints the picture, saying there was so much more going on in Paris.
Including the sleaze. I mean, it's a sleazy story. It is.
It is. And she hangs the hat on this murder, which in our day would have been like the O.J. Simpson.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Notoriety. We'll come back. I want to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to take a break now and invite your phone calls. We want to know what you're reading and maybe your suggestions as well. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. We will be back in 1 minute.
This week on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, more stars than there are in heaven. Okay, a very small slice of heaven that contains about 4 or 5 stars. Kevin Bacon, Lisa Kudrow, Paul Rubens, Lucy Lawless, and John Leguizamo join us. Plus, Carl Castle. He counts for at least 3 stars, right? I'm Peter Sagal. Listen into the news quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, tomorrow morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20. Sunny skies today, warming up to a high of 87 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 66. Mostly sunny for Saturday and a high of 87.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation, celebrating our nationally ranked businesses and nonprofit leaders, making our community stronger. With donors and funds in 33 Ohio counties, the Columbus Foundation, where your philanthropy and your community come together.
All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. Bill Eichenberger joins us because I forgot to tell him that the Doddridge Bridge is out, and he had to drive around. So my bad there. Thank you, Bill, for coming in.
I'm glad to be here.
Collect yourself. Get your breath for a second. Cassie Rose is here, WOSU's book critic and poet, educator, writer Kevin Griffith. We'd like to hear from you, so do give us a call, 292-8513. Let us know that what you're reading. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org or check out the All Sides Facebook page. Again, the phone number 292-8513. Before the break, we were just talking about Violette Noisière, this nonfiction book in Paris in the 1930s about the young woman who poisoned her parents. I wanted to make the point, she was sentenced to death. She was convicted and sentenced to death when she was 22 or something like that. And there was a gallant tradition that women were no longer guillotined or executed, but there was no guarantee that they wouldn't do that to her. They didn't. Eventually she was released.
Well, and about the guillotine part of it is that there is a law or a long time history that it was phenomenally horrendous to be to commit a parricide,
right,
or to kill your parents. I mean, even if they were abusive or whatever, and so that's why it used to be that a bag would be put over your head and you were led to the guillotine. And in some instances, I think that for men, their hands were cut off. So it was pretty gruesome. But by, the time that, for Violette, they were lifting those gruesome, whatever it is of how they treated the prisoners. But there was requirements, yes. But it was just, it was huge. If you killed a parent, it was just, you may have gone and killed the president.
Yeah, but so she actually lived to marry and have children of her own, and lived into the 1960s. But I thought it was a pretty good, whodunit, but still,
You do, but she does unfold some things for you. You don't really realize,
right,
and we've given it away here, but in the very beginning, they don't say that the mother lives. And so in the first probably 100 pages, you know that she poisoned her parents, but I don't know that you realize that the mother lives.
Right. And testified against her.
Yes.
Yeah. Bill Eichenberger, welcome. Thank you for coming in. I appreciate that. You brought me a stack of books. So let's welcome you to the program and see what you got for us.
Well, how about one I haven't read yet, but I'm starting to read.
No guillotine, so let's lighten it up a little bit for late August.
This is a Columbus native, Jack Matthews, and he has a new book out on Etruscan Press called The Gambler's Nephew, and it's set in the 1850s on an Ohio river town, and it's about an abolitionist who also has a passion against grave robbers, which I guess was pretty common practice back then for dissection and that sort of thing. But Jack Matthews is a wonderful author. He teaches at Ohio University. He wrote a book in the 60s that propelled him to a modest bit of fame called Hanger Stout Awake. And people like Eudora Welty really praised him highly. And he's pretty much just lived quietly. He dedicates this book to his wife of 63 years.
Oh.
And he's just churned out one sort of off-the-radar book after another, and they're just really wonderful.
You've read others of his books?
I read Hanger Stout Awake because he won the Ohio Anna Award.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read that and talked to him, and he's also just a very delightful person to talk to. He has a new book out on writing that's available online. I'm not sure if you could tell people how to find it, but if you search Jack's name, it's available for download online.
Jack Matthews.
Yeah, it's Jack Matthews, and he's just a wonderful writer.
He's also a noted book collector, and he's written some books about collecting first editions, and has wonderful stories about some of his own finds.
We have a call from Nikki in Clintonville, and she wants to talk about a book that we've mentioned a lot, but I like talking about it more, The Devil All the Time. I'm interested to know how people are faring with that book. Hi, Nikki, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
I didn't realize that you had already talked about
it. Oh, well, please, tell us more. Come on.
Well, of course, I've read Knock and Stiff several times, the short stories that Donald Ray Pollock had published, and his writing is so spot on. It's a delight to read his writing. And The Devil All the Time, like Knock 'Em Stiff, is a little tough to read because it really is the underbelly of society. But the writing is so captivating. The storytelling is so captivating. And I wish him all the luck. And I hope I've written him a couple of times after Knock 'Em Stiff and after this one, fan letters, and say, I hope you still are going to keep writing.
Well, speaking of that, Kevin Griffith had just brought some students to meet with him. So.
Yeah, I went down to see Don Pollock about a month ago down in Chillicothe. He was doing a book signing at, I believe it's called Book World in Chillicothe. And I took one of my former students who's now completing an MFA in fiction. We went down to visit with him and talked to him for quite a while. A very interesting guy. And we should be so lucky in Ohio. He's a real, just a gem. He lives right in Chillicothe, a few houses away from the bookstore.
He's been a guest on this program.
Yeah, he's and it's really rare. It's just like seeing a real gem of someone who's actually making a living as a writer. Can you imagine that? He gets up in the morning and he writes. He's working on his next novel now. He said he's writing nothing but novels now because that's where the money is. And he's got to make money.
Go for it, yeah.
And what a sweet man. And
he's getting
a huge book tour paid for by his publisher. He's going out to San Francisco, Iowa City, everywhere you can imagine. I mean, and he's a real sort of literary rock star, but he sure doesn't act like it. And it's really was a delight to talk with him.
And he backs it up with talent.
Yes,
which is great.
Oh yes, yeah. He talked about the amount of time he spends writing and how that book took 1 year longer than he thought because he goes through and he just chisels out every single sentence. He looks at every sentence 1, 2, 3, 4 times to make sure it's right.
You see, Nikki, we're addicted to talking about this book. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. 292-8513 is the number if you'd like to tell us about the books that you're enjoying and maybe react to some of the recommendations from our panel. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Cassie Rose, you turned me on to Sam Savage a couple of years ago, who became one of my favorite writers, and you've brought his latest. It's called Glass.
I have, and I was actually just thumbing through it this morning. I haven't read it because I was in conversation with a publisher, and they sent me a galley, and this is coming out in September. And I loved his first two books, Furman, which was an international success. Actually, it was a novel that did very well in Europe and barely made a blip on the screen here.
But give us a thumbnail of Furman. Who is Furman?
Well, that's Furman's a rat.
A rat. Yeah.
A rat in a Boston bookstore in an area of town, which probably you're familiar with.
I knew exactly where it was, yeah.
Right, and they tore it down.
Right.
And it was, you know, all the old and the art. It was an arts area. Right.
Well, it was the red light district,
and this. Oh, well, okay.
It was before my time.
I knew about it.
My grandfather used to tell me about it.
But, so, and the bookstore is basically going to be demolished, and the rat is living there and reading the books, and of course he ingests the books too, and falls in love or in adoration, you could say, of the bookstore owner, who of course is horrified by him. So it's about the demise of the bookstore, but you also get involved with this rat.
Do we have any idea what Glass is about? Is it about an aardvark or a... that's terrible.
It's tasked with writing a preface to a reissue of her late husband's long out-of-print novel. Edna is unexpectedly asked to take care of a vacationing neighbor's pet rat. Okay, here we go again.
And Furman, the return.
Yes, an aquarium of fish and an apartment full of potted plants. Anyway, the reader is never quite certain if Edna's preface is... Well, she's got... Anyway, there's a lot going on here, and this is too long for me to read. But basically, you know, he's probably created some more unforgettable characters. His second book, The Cry of the Sloth, was very humorous, dry wit about an editor of a literary magazine, had personal troubles going on, trying to keep it going, and it was a big spoof on how to keep literary magazines going in this day and age.
Anyway, I'm
he's clever.
Salivating over,
yes,
over this next book, yeah, Sam Savage. So when you're done.
Okay. Put in your mailbox. Yes.
We've got a couple of emails. Kristen writes that she listened to our program just before a trip to Europe, and she thanks you three for the recommendations that she put on her Kindle. She enjoyed Hunger Games that Cassie read.
Yes.
Is that the one with in the series?
Yes, it's
that you had me reading. Yeah.
Did you read?
I read the three of them. It's about
Suzanne Collins.
Suzanne Collins.
Yes,
remind us. That was a little.
It's one of those when you describe it, it sounds horrible, which took me and I, which is how I reacted at first until finally a bookseller said, "You have got to read this." I mean, kids are put into a future age, and kids are put into an arena to fight to the death.
Literally. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I think it. I mean, Kevin, did you read it, or your wife read it?
We both read that. Uh-huh. It's immensely popular. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it for. I'd recommend it for older teens.
Right.
It's
that was
because
we had
Because
we had a discussion. I think that you were concerned about having your children reading it.
Well, that's a huge genre now. Teenage dystopian fiction. Apparently, that's just really popular. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of spin-offs of that, and something about that taps into teens just overall.
Yeah.
Ennui and disgust with the world.
Suzanne Collins. It's a trilogy. There are three of them, apparently, right?
Yes.
There may be more coming because, as Kevin said, they're enormously popular. Mm-hmm. Susan on Facebook asks that we repeat Violette Noisier is the name of the French book, the nonfiction book, and the author is?
Sarah Mazza, M-A-Z-A.
Sarah Mazza. So the name might be hard to find, but the author's name is easy, mm-hmm. M-A-Z-A, if you just look it up that way. Sarah Mazza, and I read it and thought it was terrific. Susan wants us to know that she's reading Unbroken by Laura Hildebrand and thinks it's amazing.
Yes, I haven't read it, but it's certainly gotten a lot of good press, and it's been sitting on the bestseller list for
a long time.
A long time.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Kristen. Again, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to the All Sides Weekend Facebook page or call 292-8513. Bill Eichenberger, you brought Watership Down.
I did.
Tell me about Watership Down. Remind us.
I'm reading that with my children this summer.
That's nice.
And it's a wonderful book by Richard Adams. He also wrote The Plague Dogs and Shardik and I'm not sure, a couple of others. He's kind of involved heavily in sort of the movement against cruelty to animals. So,
yeah.
And this is Watership Down is the down where the rabbits in this story, who are the heroes of the story, flee to after their warren is overturned by a new development. And it's their odyssey of trying to find a place to live that's safe and not going to be torn down by human beings.
Now,
and
when you say
just
you're reading it with your children, what do you mean? Are you reading it aloud?
Or read it aloud.
Oh,
yeah,
that's terrific.
So
they'll actually sit and listen to you.
Yeah, they will. I read The Hobbit to them also. My daughter's younger, and so she has a little harder time, and she fidgets
still
a little bit. But my son really has come to really enjoy it, and he can concentrate on it. He sits there, and we'll read a chapter or two.
Not to be a nag, but I'm here to tell you as well, read to your children. Yes, because it pays off. Read to your children. Watership Down. Now, that's goes back a few years, because I was very young
70s,
when I read it.
Yeah, absolutely.
70s, yeah.
I'm not sure exactly when. I found this wonderful illustrated edition of it at Amazon. So as the borders of the world close down, you can still find books.
That's a shame, too. We've discussed that before, that borders closed down. That was sort of a community gathering hole for a lot of people up there on Kenny Road. And that's it's there empty now for sale, I think, the whole building.
We can only support one chain bookstore in this country?
I guess so. Never mind private bookstores, which were havens for so many of us when we were younger, at least.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Kevin, what do you got for us?
Turn. When we talk about bookstores, I just wanted to mention that Cover to Cover Books in Clintonville is now selling adult books as well. They've expanded a little bit. It's mostly a children's bookstore, but they decided to expand into the adult market a little bit. So that's an independent bookstore that provides a choice. So
it's a very fine bookstore.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
And there's also the Loft in German Village, which gives choice too.
Beehive Books up in Delaware is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a real hub. I mean, it's a well-named store because it really is a hive of activity. Mm-hmm. They do author readings and all kinds of special programming. And
I've not been there. I need to check that out.
Yeah, they sell coffee, and it's a nice place to drop by and stay for an hour or so.
Let us know where you buy your books when you call 292-8513, allsides@wosu.org. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose, Bill Eichenberger, and Kevin Griffith as we talk about books. Give us, Kevin, another recommendation.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to I'll recommend probably the strangest book I have read in the last couple of years, and I've read a lot of strange books.
Yes, you have.
This book is by Matt Johnson, who teaches at the University of Houston's creative writing program. It's called Pym, and it's Edgar Allan Poe's only novel is the narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket. Very strange novel. Poe wrote it just to make some money. Threw it together. It was a real cut and paste job. Terrible novel. but this novel concerns a professor of African American studies who is obsessed with this Poe's novel. Gets fired from his job because he refuses to serve on multicultural committees. It's got all these weird themes going on.
Resonates, yes.
Okay, but follow me along because okay. This is going to get so convoluted. So he gets fired from his job. He decides to organize an all-African-American team to journey to Antarctica to trace the actual trajectory of Poe's novel. So he takes this team down to Antarctica. And while they're in Antarctica, they uncover this race of albino Neanderthals who entrap them. Because at the end of Poe's novel, there's the scene where they see this large white figure, and the novel just ends. And so he's trying to continue it, and so they're trapped by these Neanderthals who live on Little Debbie snack cakes.
All right, now you're making it up.
Then a few of the team escapes from the Neanderthals and finds this Thomas Kincaid-like popular artist who's made, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and has set up his own house in this protective bubble in Antarctica. Because while this is all going on, the apocalypse has occurred. And oh, I'm serious. I am not making this up. And
who published this book?
I'm going to give you the rest of the show. Just take it.
The Antarctic team with Thomas Kincaid fight off the albino Neanderthals, leave Antarctica and find this paradise island called Salal, where everything's just fine.
What's wrong with this guy? I mean,
it's fantastic. He's a great writer, incredibly imaginative.
His name again?
Matt Johnson. He's also written some graphic novels, but he's a professor of creative writing at Houston.
Is it funny?
It's fantastically funny, witty, serious at the same time.
The title is P-Y-M.
Pym.
Pym by Matt Johnson. Hold that thought. We have to take a break for a bit. We're coming right back, and we're going to get to your phone calls, 292-8513, and we've got some tweets to answer as well. Don't go away. All Sides Weekend Books continues in 90 seconds.
Roseanne Cash was 18 when her father, Johnny Cash, wrote a list of songs he thought she should know. On the next Fresh Air, we hear some of them and talk with Roseanne Cash. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon, on 89.7 NPR News. And be sure to watch Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss supporters of Senate Bill 5 looking to cut a deal, downtown Columbus struggles with the side effects of success, and more. Tune in for Columbus on the Record. It's tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System, working with community partners to make Central Ohio a safer place to live. Details about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the Central Ohio Trauma System are at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Mostly sunny skies today, a high of 87. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 66 degrees. Mostly sunny for Saturday, a high of 87 degrees. And cloud Saturday night with a chance of rain, a low of 68. And then sunshine again for Friday and a high of 83. All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Well, we've just had a little bit of whimsy with Pym. We thank Kevin Griffith for bringing that to us. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend with Cassie Rose, Kevin Griffith, and Bill Eichenberger. And John has been waiting for a while on the phone, who wants to talk about Beehive Books. John, hi, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank whoever whichever one of your guests gave props to be at books. I live up in Delaware, and honestly, they're probably the reason I haven't followed my tech geek heart and gotten a Kindle or a Nook. as much as I like to have the books in my hand, I probably would have succumbed to that. But they just do a tremendous job up there, and I just wanted to thank them for giving them a shout-out here on our show.
Well, we thank you very much for your call. Beehive Books in Delaware, it's very good to know about that. Cassie Rose, people would like to be reminded about the name of the novel about the Vietnam vets you mentioned at the top of the show.
Larry Heineman wrote Paco's story, and he also wrote Close Quarters. Tim O'Brien wrote The Things They Carried. He wrote many others, but The Things They Carried is very powerful. Cacciato. There's another one called Going to Cacciato or From Cacciato. Both of them award-winning novels and very valuable, too, in their first editions.
We also have a caller who wants to tell us about independent bookstore in Granville. I'm glad to know about that. Go ahead. Hi, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
This is Michael Ann, and I just wanted to say I live in Mount Vernon, which isn't too far from Columbus. I'm in Columbus right now driving to my son's house, and we have a fabulous bookstore in Mount Vernon called Paragraphs. And then my other absolute favorite bookstore in Granville is the Reader's Garden. And both of them have that, you know, that feeling that you love in a bookstore, that cozy feeling, and the owners just help you do anything. And just wanted to put a plug in for them because they're both fabulous stores.
Oh, that's great to know. Thank you, Michael. And I'm glad to know about more independent bookstores that we don't hear enough about. So I appreciate that. And you've given two of us. Tell us the names of them again.
Yeah, and they've both been in business for years.
Okay.
I think it's a wonderful thing to say in this day and age.
Right.
The one in Granville is the Reader's Garden.
Right.
And the one in Mount Vernon is Paragraph Bookstore.
Thank you so much. Plug for independent bookstores. Thank you, Michael Lamb, for that call. I didn't know there were, I guess, more than one or two. And I was glad to know about the children's bookstore in Clintonville.
Yeah, cover to cover.
Cover to cover. Because
right on High Street.
When it was appropriate in my life, I was there all the time. You know. And I haven't been in there since.
Great store.
But it's good to know about. Thank you, Rich. Beth is on the phone with a question about Pym. Beth, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Well, when I was hearing about this bizarre book, it sounded like something that my 10-year-old grandson might have written.
Yes!
I was wondering if it would be appropriate for a 10-year-old.
No.
Okay.
It sounds great. And Matt Johnson, like I said, has authored graphic novels, and he's really, he was on NPR talking about comic books and comic book art, and he's really into that. He has a 10-year-old sensibility, but this is a more mature novel. It has mature things in it than I think a 10-year-old. 16-year-old, yes.
Wait till he's 12. Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you,
Beth. Thank you very much. We have some emails coming in. People are responding to Pym, I must say. I mean, they're wanting to know more about that.
How could they not?
I think they're responding to Kevin's description of Pym, which I'm glad that we're being podcast and available everywhere else. But let me ask Cassie Rose to give us something else to switch gears. What you got?
There is a book coming out next week called Anatomy of a Disappearance by Hisham Matar, I don't know. It's Matar. He wrote In the Country of Men, which was award-winning book that won it on both sides of the Atlantic. Is it In the Country of Men? I'm pretty sure that's it. Anyway, this book is about a young boy whose father is a diplomat in the Middle East and disappears. A minister for the Libyan government, actually, before. I'm not quite sure. But there's a revolution and all that, and he goes on to live in Egypt. But the whole aura of the story is from the 10, 12, 14-year-old boy's viewpoint and living with his father, his mother. His mother dies when he is young. His father remarries, and he adores his stepmother. And one day they're in Switzerland. They're supposed to meet the father and go on a holiday in Switzerland, and they wake up in the morning to read in the papers that his father's been kidnapped. And there's something secret about his father. They don't really know what he does, being that he's a government official for a long time in a Middle Eastern country, and then it's not really explained what he does later.
Sadly, ripped from the headlines.
Yes, very much so. And actually, this author's father disappeared.
Oh, good Lord.
So, but this is fiction. And written from the boy's viewpoint, it's not hardcore. It's a very soothing and compelling narrative voice that you could probably read, and the book is a fast read, so you could probably read it in one or two nights. It's coming out next week. I'm thinking it's probably going to get some pretty big press.
And let's repeat the name of the author.
It's Anatomy of a Disappearance by Hisham, H-I-S-H-A-M, Matar, M-A-T-A-R.
Very good. Tom on Facebook has finally started reading Simon Winchester's Professor and the Madman, A Tale of Murder, Insanity, and the Making of the Oxford Dictionary, and he's halfway through and loves it, and Bill Eichenberger just chorted in recognition. Tell me.
It's fantastic. The murder is one of the people who put together the Oxford English Dictionary was a man who was incarcerated for murder, and he was crazy. He worked on all the definitions for decades. And,
what else was he going to do?
Yeah, he had a lot of time on his hands, you would never guess that the compiling of a dictionary, even the greatest dictionary in the English language, could be that fascinating. But it's a really terrific.
So it's nonfiction.
Nonfiction, absolutely.
Simon Winchester's Professor and the Madman, great subtitle, A Tale of Murder, Insanity, and the Making of the Oxford Dictionary. It almost sounds like the name of an opera. Anne on Facebook says that her son was assigned, I'm going to say this wrong, Robopocalypse by Dan Wilson in robotics from Carnegie Mellon. It's a great sci-fi thriller. Anybody know about this? Mm-hmm. No.
You had it.
You do it. By Dan Wilson. We're glad to have, because sci-fi is quite a genre that people really love sci-fi. Mm-hmm. I don't, but a lot of people really do by Dan Wilson, PhD. 292-8513. We're getting a lot of Facebook hits and a lot of email, and I'm delighted about that. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to our Facebook page or call. And you have The Warmth of Other Suns, which given it, go.
Let me ask you a question, okay. Our listeners a question.
Okay. Do.
I am considering plunging into R.R. Martin's story about the first one is, I think, Game of Thrones, each book is 1,000 pages or something, so I'm really reluctant. It's a fantasy. It's been turned into a very popular and, I guess, well-done television series on cable. But
and the newest book came out this summer and was a big seller.
Yeah. So I'm
–
and
what's the premise?
A fictitious land. It's kind of along the lines of Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
I guess,
okay.
But it's fantasy and it's a fictitious land, and then basically factions and people battling and political intrigue and that sort of thing. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I am looking for sort of something to really sink my teeth into as we head into the fall.
What led you to even think about reading it?
Well, I've been hearing how good the show is, the TV show is, and one of my favorite bloggers has been writing about it, the show, and I want to watch the show and then sort of have this sort of moral code to read the book before I watch the movie or the show. So,
and this is the author where it's an ongoing. Is this the third book that came out?
Yes, third, and I think there are supposed to be two or three more.
Okay, all right. So it's a huge commitment if you get into it.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of a little leery, but I'm also sort of excited. So I don't know. I mean, I had a bad experience with what's that other fantasy book about? Donaldson, I think is the guy's name. I can't remember. Well, anyhow. Should I talk about the Warmth of Other Suns real quick?
We have a fan of yours on the phone.
Okay.
A Bill Eichenberger fan is on the phone named Sue, who's traveling and wants to know, are you writing anything soon? Hi, Sue. Go ahead.
Hi, Bill. I really loved your writing and miss you a lot.
Thank you, Sue.
If you are writing anything that I could read.
I'm writing for the book reviews for the Plain Dealer and also the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, but it's hard to say when anything would ever run in there. So, my blog is sort of on hold while I'm doing a lot of freelance stuff, but I do write a blog called The Book Surf.
The Book Surf, okay.
Yeah.
Could she find, though, do the reviews run online?
So you could search for your name at the Plain Dealer website, and they would all pop up. They all sort of pop up on the first page.
Some people Google old boyfriends. Everybody else can Google Bill Eichenberger and find out more about what he's doing right now. We have a couple of people waiting to call, but I just wanted to throw it to Kevin a bit because I don't want to neglect my man Kevin over here. If you've got one more recommendation for us.
I wanted to... we'll go from the ridiculous to the sublime. I had this very little book that caught my attention. It'd be great for a gift to someone. It's called Love in a Dish, and it's the selected writings of M.F.K. Fisher. M.F.K. Fisher,
yes.
Who W.H. Auden called the greatest prose writer who ever lived.
Wow.
And
wow.
M.F.K. Fisher is a great writer on all things food.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And these are incredibly eloquently written essays. This is the best from all her books in a little, like, 100-page novella. It's called Love in a Dish by M.F.K. Fisher. Can I read you just a
bit. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. This is the first paragraph from Love Was the Pearl. The love life of an oyster is a curious one, dependent on the vagaries of temperature and the tides. If its world is warm, if the water around it is about 70 degrees, it is able to send out a little potent flood of milt and thus excite a female to her monstrous spawning, now 5 million eggs, now 50. And if the tide is right, the milt will meet the eggs and spats will result.
God.
Beautiful. Utter poetry. There.
Mary Frances Kennedy Fisher.
Yeah.
Anybody who names the book How to Eat a Wolf is okay
yeah.
by me.
Incredible
she,
writer.
She was active. She died in the last 10 years as an elderly mm-hmm. woman. She was mm-hmm. active in the around World War II mm-hmm. and lived in France for many years. And mm-hmm. her writing about food is almost mm-hmm. sexual.
Oh, I mean, it is. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And this is great because it condenses everything down to just the best. Love in a Dish, M.F.K. Fisher.
That's a great find.
That is mm-hmm. a great mm-hmm. gift. That's right. Now, we have another Bill Eichenberger fan. This is Gwyneth in Columbus, who loves the Game of Thrones series.
Oh,
so, Bill, let's hear from Gwyneth. Hi, Gwyneth. Are you there? I did not.
Oh, Christopher.
Gwyneth, I hung up on you. Call back. We'll wait to talk to Amy, who wants to tell us more about, thank goodness, independent bookstores. Thank you. Hi, Amy. Amy?
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember the name of it, but up on 161, there is an independent bookstore in an old church.
Yeah.
It's in Linworth.
Linworth, yeah.
Isn't that Village Books?
Village Books. Village Bookshop,
yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I mean, 20, 30 years ago, my husband and I used to go there on dates even.
You know, oh, boy.
Well,
good
great
for you.
To go and browse and, you know, spend some time. But, yeah, so I wanted to remind people of that. And then also, anything by Christopher Moore. I mean, it's not heavy reading.
Kevin gave us a little recognition over there. Yeah, yeah. Good.
Yeah. Particularly A Dirty Job.
Okay.
It's just a great read, very quick, and mm-hmm. very heartfelt.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being reminded that is a wonderful bookstore that a lot of us have really enjoyed. So thank you, Amy, for that call. We've had an email from Marilyn who recommends I Don't Have to Make Everything All Better by Gary and Joy Lundberg, published by Penguin. It's helped with relationships and things like that. Did you know about it?
Nope.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, it's a great title. I don't have to make everything all. It sounds like a bumper sticker to me. It's very good. I Don't Have to Make Everything All Better by Gary and Joy Lundberg. I thank Marilyn for the recommendation. We have Alan from Pickerington who has some recommendations for us. Hi there, Alan.
Hi. My 11-year-old son, I read a lot of his books that he reads. And I would recommend The Last Apprentice series by Joseph Delaney, The Ranger's Apprentice series by John Flanagan, and anything by Kerry Paulson, who my son just loves his books as well.
So you're reading books that are these books marketed to young to kids?
Yes, primarily? They're marketed to kids. They're marketed to about that age group, 10, 11-year-old boys. They're coming-of-age stories predominantly. I'm 47 years old, and I love them.
That's great.
And my 76-year-old dad loves them as well. So.
Well, we know what to get you for Father's Day. That's terrific. Alan, thank you so much. We appreciate hearing from you. Thank you.
I think that there's a huge reading segment in the country that of adults that are reading the teenage books.
Mm-hmm.
There was an essay in the New York Times about a group in New York City and that reads teenage books or younger adult books because of the freedom it gives you. It's not the big adult issues mm-hmm. you have to deal with.
Yeah, that would be nice. For mm-hmm. easier days for some of us. Mm-hmm. Gwyneth, wherever you are, call back. And I'm sorry I hit the wrong button again. I apologize for that. We've got 5 minutes left, but let's talk to Joyce, who wants to recommend The Glass Castle. Hi, Joyce.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to recommend Jeanette Walls, The Glass Castle. I found it was really an interesting autobiography about this woman's childhood. And it made me think a lot about my own childhood. And it certainly puts a lot of things in perspective. And I thought it was not a really a simple story, but more of a complex one when you read the whole book through, and it wasn't like she was sorry for herself or whatever. It was sparse writing and very, very interesting.
Well, we thank you for that. Tell me the author once more.
Jeanette Wall.
Jeanette Wall. Okay. Thank you very much, Joyce, for the recommendation. We have 4 minutes yet to go, so there's time for one or two calls, 292-8513, if they are brief. Anybody want to have last words and last recommendations?
I would like to just bring some forward talk a little bit about Joshua Moore in Damascus. He's got a book coming out in October, and he's also going to be here at Capital University. So mm-hmm. I'm sure Kevin could probably talk about him. But
do, yes.
And well, Damascus is published by $2 Radio here in Granville.
Just to follow up on that just a little bit. Yeah, we're working on Joshua Moore visiting Capital. He will be here the first week of November. When we come back in September, I'll let you know the exact details and times. But yeah, he's promoting this book, Damascus. It's his third novel. And also sort of just promoting $2 mm-hmm. Radio, a great mm-hmm. independent local press that does a great job. So he'll be at Capitol. And the other last thing I'd like to say is the other big author we're bringing in November is Art Spiegelman will be at Capitol, author of Mouse and illustrator of mm-hmm. Mouse. So he'll be there as well. But we're looking forward to Joshua Moore. Termite Parade was an excellent novel as well, the second novel he mm-hmm. had before this. He's an interesting writer, original, fresh, but not pretentious, mm-hmm. Engaging characters. You can identify with them, but they're very complicated as well. So,
Did Mouse pretty much invent the graphic genre?
Pretty much, yeah. And that's mm-hmm. a canonical work now in literature mm-hmm. departments. Everybody includes
it's
that.
About 30 years mm-hmm. ago, maybe?
Yes, that's right.
Because mm-hmm. I think I read that in college. So
that's right.
Uh-huh. That's good to know. And Bobby is on the phone. I want to take one more call because Bobby, I love this comment, enjoys reading adult books with grandson. Hi, Bobby.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about I've been reading or have read with my grandson a lot of the books that he likes to read. And what I've discovered is that it gives us a topic of conversation that we can discuss the literary issues as well as just the insights that he gets. It gives me a perspective on where he's coming from in other things in his life. I would recommend it for parents and grandparents. It will really enhance your communications with your kids.
Bobby, thank you so much. I could not agree with you more, and I'm delighted to hear a lot of comments. We have a lot of people we don't have time to get to. I'm sorry, but a lot of people are calling and writing in, reiterating what Bill Eichenberger began. Read to your kids. Mm-hmm. Read to your grandchildren. Read what they read. It is a good sort of mm-hmm. icebreaker. As they get to be older teenagers, forget it. You don't want to know what they read, and you won't understand it anyway. But I want to thank our panel today, Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic and has a blog called The Longest Chapter, which if you love books, you shouldn't miss. Bill Eichenberger is busy doing too many things, but he also has a blog that you shouldn't miss because he's going to revive it called The Book Surf. Thank you much. And Kevin Griffith is busy making literature accessible and understandable and wonderful to all of us. He is based at Capital University. You teach creative writing, among other
That's
things,
right.
don't you?
Mm-hmm.
He is also very much part of bringing great authors to Columbus. And remind us again about November real fast.
Joshua Moore and Art Spiegelman
will be at Capital University, mm-hmm. and we will tell you more about that as the date approaches. I thank mm-hmm. you three for coming in today. I thank all of you for listening and for your calls. Gwyneth, I'm sorry. Try again. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. Thank you, producer Amy Jurevich. Thank you to Letitia Wiggins. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus. And streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.